Hello, storytellers and creatives, and welcome to season one, episode seven of the Write Script Reviews. And today we're going to be talking about Snowfall, the FX original TV drama series. And I've done little character breakdowns about the central characters of this series, like Franklin Sate, Lucia Villanueva, Louis, Jerome, all those people. You can check those out on my YouTube channel. But I'm also going to be starting from the beginning on this podcast so I can just cover the entire series because this series is really good, and it also talks about a time in American history where the drug epidemic got really, really grimy, especially in certain neighborhoods. And what I love about this series is that it shows how everybody had a hand in it. It wasn't just the corner boy, it wasn't just the people in quote unquote urban neighborhoods. It was, the government, members of the CIA, people of other races and other communities. So it wasn't just one demographic. Everybody literally had a hand in this. And it really takes on an honest approach because there are no real winners in this situation. Like, yeah, you're getting money selling this stuff, but at what cost? Killing your own community, creating more fiends, more drug addicts, destroying families. Like, what are you really doing here? Yeah, you're selling a product that's high in demand, but it's killing people, right? So this series really talks a lot about selling your soul, morals, what you're willing to do, what line you won't cross, what your breaking point is. And we see that a lot, especially with the main character, Franklin Saint. Now, I could be wrong, but I think at the very beginning of the series, he's really young, like 18 or 19. He's not quite in his 20s, but he's close. And the sad thing about Franklin is that he is extremely intelligent, right? I mean, he has just an entrepreneurial spirit. He was meant to be his own boss. But then when you see him, you're like, man, like, you didn't have to do all this. You didn't have to be a drug dealer and do all this extra stuff and get caught up like this. You actually have the brains to run a legitimate business. All he was really missing was maybe learning a couple more business skills and then getting the capital. But other than that, he really didn't have to do all this. I don't know. Some people might disagree with me, but that's just my opinion. And so in the very beginning, we see South Central LA. We see a bunch of kids. It's summertime. They're going to the ice cream truck. A few of them steal either candy or ice cream, and Franklin stops them, and his friends are like, "Why are you stopping some little 8, 9-year-old kids from stealing some candy?" And Franklin says to them, "They gotta learn. That ain't how America works." And that's really telling because it shows that Franklin is aware now. He's able to see the good, the bad, the ugly of this country from the lens of a young Black American male. He's able to see how the world is favorable to certain people and then either discards other people and throws them by the wayside. So he's no stranger to how the world really is. And the time period is June 14th, 1983, so early 80s. Then we see a boxing match, and Oso's there. He's going against this other guy, and then we see Lucia Villanueva and her cousin Pedro. Then after the show, Franklin is like, "Oso, man, let me get an autograph. I'm such a big fan of yours, yada yada yada," not knowing that Oso is in the middle of a deal with Pedro and Lucia. More on them later because their operation is just wow, right? And then we see people doing lines of coke in this huge mansion, right? Money, beautiful women, alcohol, drugs, everything. And one woman is like, "Oh my God, this stuff is amazing. My heart's beating like a bunny rabbit." And that's really foreshadowing what's to come because you don't even have to be a doctor to know that if your heart is beating that fast, like a bunny rabbit, there's something wrong. You're either going to crash, die, go into cardiac arrest, something bad is going to happen. And this is really how coke messed up a lot of people. Some people died on the very first hit. Some people got addicted on the very first hit. And then we hear a horrible scream throughout the mansion, and one man ends up vomiting uncontrollably and goes into shock and dies. Everyone's frantic. And it comes out that that man was a CIA agent named Logan Miller. And then we see Teddy at his job, and Alejandro, who is a friend, quote unquote, friend of Logan Miller, stops by, like, "Hey, I was told if there was ever a problem, you're the man to see, Teddy." And he's like, "You know, I need you to take a ride with me. You can bring the gun if it makes you more comfortable." Then we see in the neighborhood in South Central that Franklin is well liked and respected in the neighborhood by kids and adults alike. They all love him, they hold him in high regard, and he stops by his Uncle Jerome's house. And that's Sissy's brother. That's pretty much, you know, sibling rivalry. Sissy is very different from Jerome. Sissy is hardworking. She would never do anything illegal. She would always do something legitimate, whereas Jerome has no problem doing certain things that are illegal, like selling weed, stuff like that, you know. And then Sissy has no idea that Jerome already has Franklin in the middle of all this madness, helping him out with his little drug operation, helping him bag up weed and sell it. And Jerome asks him, "Hey, have you seen your dad lately?" Franklin says no. And the question is, what's going on with his dad? Is he absent? Is his dad in prison? Is he homeless? What is it? But just from that little question, we can tell that there's some issue there. Then we see a woman come to the door who's begging Jerome to get out of the house. And this is a woman that Jerome has been messing around with, and he sicks Louie on her, and they get into this huge fight. And I'm not gonna lie, okay? Even though I know that's reality, watching that, I was like, really? That part was kind of sickening, but for that environment, it is a thing that does happen where he didn't want to put hands on the woman himself because, as a man, let's be real, he probably would have killed her. Whereas he knew Louie would do enough damage, but she wouldn't kill her. She would just rough her up. So I guess that's kind of an explanation, but still, grimy. But they do a good job of showing the grimy part. And then we see the man, Alejandro, bring Teddy to the scene where Logan overdosed on the cocaine. And he's like, "Okay, now you see why I didn't call an ambulance." And at this point, Teddy has questions. He's like, "Okay, who are you? Why does a dead CIA officer have a mountain of cocaine in his pool?" And at that point, Alejandro is like, "Are you hungry?" Which means they're about to have a really deep conversation. And by the time we get back from the commercial break, this is a good example of starting late and leaving early. They don't go into this whole rigmarole of exposition and everything like that. It's the aftermath of Alejandro explaining everything to Teddy so that we don't get bogged down in that scene. And Teddy learns about the entire operation, and Alejandro is trying to get him on board, but Teddy is extremely hesitant. Then we see Franklin bagging the supply of weed, and he stuffs everything in his backpack when he hears his mom pull up in the driveway. And the relationship that he and Sissy have as mother and son, they're extremely close, strong bond. She's hardworking and tries really hard to do the right thing, even if it kills her. One thing I can say about Sissy is that she's really not a follower in the beginning. She stands on her square about a lot of things. The phone rings, and this is where we get a glimpse into how horrible and toxic Sissy's work environment is. She works as a leasing agent, and that is stressful. Her boss is always breathing down her neck. She never gets a minute's peace. There's all that pressure, and she's not even getting paid a decent amount. She's still struggling. And she answers the phone. She's like, "St. Residence. Yes, sir, I just did. Told her she had 2 days as we discussed. No, you're right. No sense in waiting. I'll go out back first thing and take care of it. I'll have a new tenant in there within a week. One that pays on time. Have a good night. Bye-bye." And in that moment, even though we may or may not agree with why Franklin starts getting deeper and deeper into the drug game, we don't agree with him doing it, but we know why he's doing it, or at least his thought process, and we have clarity. He doesn't like seeing his mother struggle and do backbreaking work and be tired and exhausted and just mentally drained from a job that's not even paying her a decent wage. And so he's thinking, hey, you know, the world is corrupt. I might as well be corrupt too, which is really a self-fulfilling prophecy, but hey, everyone has their flaws, right? And Sissy looks at Franklin. She's like, "Don't say it." And he's like, "I didn't say anything." She says, "Yeah, but you were thinking it." And he's like, "I was thinking about how good your white phone voice got." And that's another good example of code switching. That's another thing that Franklin doesn't want to have to do, that he's seen the older generation have to do. Code switch. You can't really be yourself. You have to be all prim and proper. You have to talk a certain way. Your vernacular has to be a certain way. You can't use a certain tone of voice. Oh no, they'll see you as a threat, right? So Franklin, he wants no part of that life, no part of that existence. And then we see Franklin and his crush Melody, next door neighbor, beautiful girl, also the daughter of a police officer. Keep that in mind. They lock eyes, and you can tell that her father, Andre, is very overprotective of his daughter. I mean, he cussed out Leon just for saying hi to his daughter. So that just tells you, if he doesn't even like people saying hi to his daughter, he's really not gonna like Franklin being a drug dealer and trying to date her, right? And then we see on the bus that Leon is kind of a hothead, and it's revealed that he's been in juvie, and one of the white passengers is like, "Hey, would you mind turning down that boombox?" You know, those old school boomboxes they had in the 80s and the 90s. They're in the middle of a city bus with the boombox just blasting, right? And Leon is like, "You ask me that one more time, you're going to eat this radio." And even Franklin is like, "I'm moving away from you. You are so stupid." And it shows how even though they're friends, Franklin has a different temperament compared to Leon. Whereas Leon is more impulsive and Franklin is more strategic. He'll think before he reacts, whereas Leon is like, "Oh, I have that shoot first mentality." Strong contrast between friends. Then they meet up with Rob, who's a white guy who lives up in the Hollywood Hills. It's pretty much a drug drop-off, and he's the son of a prominent Hollywood director. They have money, obviously, and it's Coke Central, and he ends up inviting Franklin to another one of his parties later on. And Leon just can't believe that other world that Franklin is exposed to. He's like, "Wow, it's like you're living a whole other life out here." Franklin kind of shrugs it off, like, it's cool for a minute, but it ain't home. Then we see Teddy cleaning up the crime scene where the CIA agent, Logan Miller, overdosed. And as he's cleaning, he notices all the blood spots, like, wait a minute, these are everywhere. If he overdosed and he's one of the only few that overdosed, why are there so many blood stains here? Good question. Then we see Pedro, Lucia, and Oso. I told you we would get back to them. And they're giving Oso orders because keep in mind, Lucia and Pedro are part of a drug family, pretty much a crime mob boss type family. And Oso wants in, but he's going to have to get through his little initiation before they accept him in with open arms. And Lucia tells him, once you get the money, there's going to be a voice in your head telling you to get in your car and drive east until you hit ocean, and there's nothing we can do to stop you. You want to be a part of our business, of our family? The only way that happens is if we trust you. Pedro's like, oh, he knows. If he tries anything, I'll hunt him down and kill him myself, right? And it's clear. Oso is in way too deep now. He cannot turn around. There's no going back. Then Melody meets up with Franklin at the corner store, and of course she snuck out. Benefits of having a protective parent, or should I say overprotective parent. She invites him to a party, and he's like, no. He kind of has this I'm too cool for school attitude. Like, I'm not going to a high school party. I'm too old for that. She's like, oh, whatever. You're 2 years older than me. Then the conversation goes to drinking, and she's like, so how come you don't drink? And Franklin tells her, it just don't make me feel good. All tired and slow, but. This is why I tell you guys all the time, core wound is everything. Franklin's dad is an alcoholic, which would explain why Franklin doesn't drink because he doesn't want to end up like his father. He's looking at his father, and when he looks at him, he sees everything he does not want to become. And his father is also the reason why his mom is struggling. So there's a lot of resentment there, too. And Melody asks him, okay, if alcohol doesn't make you feel good, then what does? And Franklin is like, working, getting paid, I'm after freedom. And while it's admirable that he's after freedom and entrepreneurship, this is more of a cautionary tale because the way he's going about it, he's looking at it like, oh, as long as I'm getting money, I'm good. But what he doesn't realize is that all money isn't good money. If it's blood money, if it's drug money, if it's something you got illegally, it's not good, and eventually it'll catch up to you if you're not careful. That's how a lot of people have had money ruin them. So this really shows the dark side as well as the glamorous side, too. And then Franklin goes to the party that Rob invited him to, and Rob is like, so I got a favor to ask. That was the last of my parents' coke, and my girl really likes it. I know a guy who's my parents' dealer, but he's kind of crazy. And Franklin can see right through all of it. He's like, oh, I get it. You're afraid to go get it, so send the black guy, right? Whatever, I'll be the black guy. I'm always the black guy. But what Franklin doesn't realize is this dude really is crazy. Javi, Israeli drug dealer. And they get to Javi's house, and Rob is like, so this guy is legitimately insane, so just get in and get out. And Franklin, like I said before, he underestimates it. And just as he's about to go to the door, boom, he hears a gunshot. What did I tell you about foreshadowing? A foreshadowing of what's to come. And Javi takes one look at Franklin and he's like, oh, the Volpe kid sent you here because he's afraid? Wow. What do you want? And Franklin tells him, I'm here to buy coke off of you. And Javi doesn't take him seriously at first. He's like, what? I don't sell Coke to kids. I definitely don't sell $200 worth of Coke. I sell kilos to people with money. Now go, scram. And at that point, Franklin takes a huge risk, and I don't even think he really knows what he's getting himself into. He's caught up with the idea of making a lot of money and making it out of poverty and out of the underclass and all that kind of stuff, so it's clouding his judgment. And he's like, okay, front me a key and I'll turn it around quick. And Javi's like, oh, really? How do you plan on doing that? Then Franklin goes into this whole spiel about, I know people in my neighborhood, my people could do it, and it could mean a whole new client base for you, a whole new revenue stream. And Javi's like, just because you know some fancy words doesn't mean you're not full of it. And then Javi tests him by having Franklin act as a crash test dummy. He has Franklin put on a bulletproof vest and he's like, okay, I'm gonna shoot you and you better not move. I'm gonna shoot you directly in the chest. And Franklin's scared, but he takes it like a champ and moves even closer. Javi is impressed and shoots the champagne bottles instead. And Franklin's breathing, a sigh of relief, like, okay, good, he didn't kill me. And he's like, you got balls, kid, I'll give you that. Now, how do I know you're not just gonna take my kilo and disappear? Franklin is like, I won't. Stealing from you gets me a one-time payday and a lifetime of looking over my shoulder. But if I move the key and bring you back the cash, then I got a friend for life. And Javi is like, okay, and here's the kicker. Here is what Franklin does not see coming. He's like, you got one day to bring me $12,000. And at that point, Franklin's calm demeanor changes a little subtly. He's like, what? What? How am I supposed to cut it, bag it, sell it, and bring it back to you in one day? And Javi's like, that's not my problem. You claim you have the market. Show me. And he's like, okay, I'm gonna get home. He's like, oh no, the Volpe kid gave you a ride? And Franklin's like, well, yeah. He's like, oh no, my guys are your ride now. That way I know where you live. So, see? Once you're in the drug game like that, there's really no way out. Those people know you. They know where you live. They know who your family is. And this is why a lot of the time people in that kind of dealings and stuff like that, their family ends up becoming collateral damage. And nowadays, I mean, this was back in the 80s, but even nowadays, like in this time period, sometimes people won't even kill the person directly. They'll kill their family to really get to them. Like, I'm not gonna kill you. I'm gonna leave you alive, but I'll kill your wife. I'll kill your kids. I'll kill somebody close to you, your mother, your father, your siblings, your nieces, your nephews, somebody that it would crush you if they died in that manner. That's really how people get caught up. And then we see Teddy calling Julia, who's his estranged wife. They have a son together. They can't really stay on the phone too long. And it's interesting how their relationship is pretty much estranged because of his job and the nature of it. And he can't really be a full-time dad to his son either. Meanwhile, back at Louis and Jerome's house, Louis is asleep. And Jerome and Franklin are having a serious discussion. Jerome can tell that Franklin is like wanting to tell him something big, and he's like, okay, nephew, just spit it out. What is it? And Franklin shows him the Coke product he got from Javi. And Jerome is like, boy, I'm in the weed and water business. What are you doing with that much Coke? Franklin, I don't need anybody coming to my house looking for that. And Franklin's like, relax, Unc, I got a new friend. And Jerome is like, no. Who are you dealing with, nephew? Ain't nobody black. And Franklin's like, look, I told him I'd turn it around fast. I got till tomorrow to make good. And Jerome is like, oh my God, what have you gotten yourself into? Tomorrow? How are you going to get a kilo of coke off in 24 hours around here? And Franklin's like, you've been in the game for a while. Gotta know someone who can afford it. I figured we'd split the profits. And Jerome wants no part of it. He's like, you have the nerve to come to my house and do this? And Franklin's like, I'm trying to make some real money. I thought you'd be down. And Jerome is like, look, money ain't nothing but paper with them crackers' faces on it, and that brick ain't nothing that come with it, I promise you. And he's like, look, you're chasing money. You don't even really know what you have gotten yourself into with this man. There is no getting out. And Franklin's like, look, uncle, I see what you're saying, but I tried to do things the right way. Went to the other side, and you know what I learned? The game's rigged. It ain't made for people like us. I'm rewriting the rules, but Unc, I need your help to do it. And Jerome turns him down at first. He's like, not this time, nephew. Get out of my house. Out. And what he doesn't know is that Louis was eavesdropping on their whole conversation. Franklin goes home, and then Louis taps on his bedroom window, like, hey, are you sure it's real? And he nods, and it's clear at that point that she's down with the plan. Then we see Oso sitting in his car right before he's about to break into a house, and he disarms the security system. The door opens. Right when he's stealing the huge stash of money and the owner is back, a fight ensues and Oso throws the man over the banister and he's dead instantly. Alejandro is in the process of informing Teddy about the major players in the game, including Javi, Pedro, and Lucia. See, right now, Franklin is like teeter-tottering on the edge of the game. He's not fully in it yet. He's not quite on their radar, but he will be soon. But that's why he's not mentioned, because he's still technically a newbie. And Teddy is like, hey, Alejandro, you said only you and Logan and a few others overdosed, but there was blood in a few places down there. And Alejandro shrugs it off. He's like, well, before he lost consciousness, Logan was moving around, bleeding everywhere. It got all over. Don't worry so much. And then this is where things get really interesting. We see Louis and Franklin going to a club, which is really a place where they sell drugs too, of course, but they go to one of Louis's old rivals, who is Claudia. And what Franklin doesn't know at first is that Louis used to work for Claudia. I don't know if it was as a prostitute or as a stripper, but she used to work for Claudia in some form or fashion, or maybe as a bartender. I don't remember which, but it was one of those three. And Claudia and Louis do not have a good history. They have a romantic past. They have a lot of bad blood between them, but the fact that Louis took him to see Claudia means that she's desperate and she doesn't want Franklin to be put in a position where he's killed. And so they're able to win Claudia over, and that's no easy thing because Claudia is street. Even though she's dressed, real feminine and stuff like that, no, she's about as street as a man. She's street. Like, she already beat up Louis. She already tried to beat up Franklin. She held a gun to his face, the whole thing. And then we see Franklin explaining to her when she has the gun in his face, and he's like, look, here's what I can tell you. Dude, I got that from, he's Israeli, connected, dangerous, gave me that bird on consignment. It's true. But you're right, Claudia. I am desperate. So the way I figure, break it down like this. Buy this key, and I will bring you another one tomorrow and another one the day after that if you want. A little cash from my troubles to make sure you get the purest coke there is. We both win, or you kill us and take it. Just know if you do, he will come looking for me, and if I'm dead, he won't stop till he finds out who did it. And Claudia realizes, okay, it's not in my best interest to kill this boy, because if I kill him, then there's a target on my back, and now I have a crazy, insane Israeli drug dealer looking for me. And of course, she pays him off for the coke. And Louis is looking at Franklin as he stares at the money. And Louis's like, you're staring at that money like you want to talk dirty to it. But for real, Jerome was telling the truth, you know. That mess ain't worth the trouble it comes with. And Franklin's like, well, then why did you bring me in here? Louis's like, it was either that or let some Russian gangster kill you. If you're smart, you introduce him to Claudia and get out now. Franklin's like, oh, if I do that, I get nothing. They stop at a traffic light and Louis gives him a gun. At first, Franklin is hesitant. He's like, I don't need it. She's like, no, who are you kidding? You're gonna need it. And he's like, no, I don't. She's like, look, you're gonna learn one way or the other. Take it. And he reluctantly takes it, and that's another initiation. He's trying so hard, like, okay, I'll be in it, but I don't need to carry a gun. No, if you're in it like that, there's no way around not carrying a weapon. It's either carry a weapon or you won't last long. And a homeless man ends up walking down the street in front of them, and that homeless man is his father. And Louis is like, you want to talk to him? And Franklin's hesitant. He's like, go on, baby, go out. Talk to your daddy. And Franklin's like, nah. And Louis asks him, are you sure? And he's like, just drive the fucking car. And that really says a lot, that there's a lot of hurt, a lot of trauma, a lot of pain, a lot of resentment. And this also speaks to the reason of why Franklin is out there doing what he's doing. But one thing he doesn't realize is that drug dealers are also what helped create homeless addicts like his father. So he's out here creating the very people that he has a disdain for. It's that deep, you know what I mean? And what I like about this is that it shows that there's really no good guy here. It's really a lot of people who they had good intentions going in, but somewhere down the line, they sold their soul and they got lost. I mean, what's a popular phrase? The road to hell is paved with good intentions, right? I'm sure when Franklin first decided or made a conscious decision to do this, he was like, oh, well, I'm gonna do this, you know, take care of my mom, take care of myself, put us in a better position. But one thing he didn't consider, what happens when you get addicted to the money? Not so much the product, because Franklin isn't really the type to get addicted or, you know, that little phrase, get high off your own supply, yada, yada, yada. That's not him. But he is the type to get addicted to the money. And this is what a lot of people talk about. Not so much the need for money, but the love of it, to where you'll do anything for money. Even if it's immoral, even if it's unethical, you'll still do it because, oh, I'm getting a check. Oh, I'm getting paid. And what Franklin doesn't realize is that he's going down a slippery slope. And by the time he realizes what he's really done to the community, to himself, to the people around him, it'll be too late. But anyway, you guys, that's it for my review of the pilot for Snowfall. Be sure to click the links in my description for a script coverage evaluation and to also download my free ebook called The Character Bio Playbook. Have a good one, you guys, and I'll catch you again in the next podcast. Have a good night.